Penguin Random House Canada presents The Last Doctor, Lessons in Living from the Front Lines of Medical Assistance in Dying, by Jean Marmorio and Johanna Schneller. Read for you by Eve Crawford and Dr. Jean Marmorio.
For Yolanda Martins, whose generosity and grace in her quest for a dignified death prompted an inner journey, and this book.
Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again, whoever you are, no matter how lonely. The world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. Mary Oliver.
Prologue. Yolanda, Part 1. I was supposed to administer the drugs that would end Yolanda Martin's life at 10 a.m. There was only one problem. I needed a nurse to insert the intravenous lines, and the nurse hadn't arrived. The mood in the house had already gone up and down more times than an elevator. About a dozen of Yolanda's friends and family, a vivacious, urbane bunch, were gathered in this meticulously renovated Victorian in Toronto's Annex neighborhood, owned by Yolanda's friend Patty, to send her off. Someone had hung up strings of white fairy lights. Someone had made coffee. Someone else had opened tequila and champagne, and it seemed like every glass in the kitchen was in use. Bunches of flowers and boxes of tissues sat on the large, square kitchen island, and on every other surface, too. Yolanda, who had a sly sense of humor, had made an upbeat death playlist, and she and her loved ones had spent the last hour chatting, crying, dancing, laughing, and belting out the lyrics to Forever Young and Karma Chameleon. But as 10 a.m. came and went, people's eyes started flicking to me. By this July day in 2018, almost 18 months since I had first helped a person to die, I had experienced repeatedly the tremendous good in it. The relief on patients' faces when they give their final consent. The mournful yet joyful gatherings, like this one for Yolanda, to witness loved ones dying by their own rules, often in their own beds. The family members who hugged me afterward, who sat down close beside me to tell me stories about the person to whom they'd just bade farewell. That's when I would cry. I almost always cry. I first met Yolanda back in November 2017. She was one of the certain ones. She was only 45, but she had been sick with a rare lung disease for 30 years. Yet somehow, she'd lived a big life. She was a scientific researcher at Harvard. She'd jumped out of planes and dived deep to coral reefs. She had a forceful personality. Her friends jokingly called her the boss. They loved saying that what Yolanda wanted, Yolanda got. But in the last 2 years, that big life had narrowed. It began to consist mainly of medicines, paperwork, pain. She had no money, no boyfriend. Her energy was gone, her concentration dwindling. She had to move back to her parents' house in Whitby, a town about an hour east of Toronto, with short stays here at Patty's. Yolanda was becoming less and less herself. She was ready to go. Now that day had arrived. Yolanda had dressed for it in a watery blue silk kimono, a striped shirt, leggings, and little velvet slippers. She also wore a clear plastic oxygen tube slung around her neck and tucked into her nostrils. The cord on the oxygen tank was long enough that she could move throughout the open concept first floor, from living room to dining area to kitchen, playing hostess at her own death cocktail party. Time ticked by. It's not that everyone wanted me to begin Yolanda's end, but they'd steeled themselves for a certain hour. The extra minutes were welcome, but also awkward. My eyes, meanwhile, kept flicking to the door. I had discreetly phoned my office. Had the agency acknowledged my request for a nurse? Yes. So where was she? Feeling some urgency now, I called one of my go-to nurses, Yuri. He has a preternatural serenity that makes you feel anything is doable. He was in a meeting, but he agreed to jump in his car and come right away. At 10:20, I made an announcement. We try to plan this day as carefully as possible, but sometimes things happen, I said. I'm always direct. I've learned it's what people want. By the time they've reached this point, this terminus, they don't need euphemisms. They know where they are and why. The nurse who was to start the IV hasn't come, I explained. But there is a nurse on the way now. 20 minutes or so. A beat of silence. Then the chatting and music resumed. Yolanda's brother sprinted up the street to the liquor store. It opened at 10 a.m., a weird silver lining, and came back with more champagne. Someone turned up the music. There was one more issue, but I didn't mention it. And neither did Yolanda. Most medical assistants in dying, maid, provisions aren't time-sensitive. The end will arrive. A few minutes here or there won't change that. But Yolanda's came with a deadline. When she knew, really fully knew, that she was going to die, she was adamant that it not be in vain. She would donate her lungs, etched as they were with the mysterious runes of her disease, to the pathologists at Toronto General Hospital. They'd booked an operating room for 1 p.m. to remove them. I'd booked a funeral home to transport her body from Patty's house to the hospital and then back to the funeral home. I would not, could not, fail her in this. I had promised her that I'd get this done. I was determined to remain calm. But Yolanda, she didn't have to fake it. She was there, in the zone, in the certainty. This moment had been coming for her for most of her young life. Instead of shrinking from it, she was pulling it close. I kept thinking of what she'd said to me in the spring after her formal request for spiritual guidance had fallen through one of the gaping cracks in the system I'd referred her to. She was so tired of carrying the burden all alone. We had tried, but while all kinds of support were in place for in-hospital patients, there wasn't an outreach person for people in Yolanda's situation, living with her fatal disease at home. The hospital team who tried to connect her with a spiritual advisor was apologetic. I was apologetic. But after the advisor failed to materialize, Yolanda had come up with a new plan. "You will tell my story," she said to me. It was not a request. So here we go.
Chapter 1. The Beginning. February 6, 2015. A bleary day. At 7 a.m., I was on a treadmill, finishing my pre-office workout at a downtown gym. The TV screens above me were tuned to the news. Ordinary stuff. Traffic. Weather. I was half-watching, my overly busy schedule running through my overly busy brain. Then, game-changing words scrolled across the screen. After a long battle, the Supreme Court of Canada had ruled in a landmark case, Carter v. Canada. The decision was unanimous, 9-0, prohibiting an individual who had a serious illness or disease from
Sample complete. Ready to continue?